So there's only one form of, you know, mind control: repetition and poison. So if you want to brainwash yourself, if you want to mind control yourself and behavior modify yourself, you have only one choice. You have to control the repetitive content of your environment in the directions of your dreams at the time, and you got to reduce your toxicity.
Greetings and love, you beautiful humans. Ben Hardy here, co-host, fellow human, traveler on this lifelong journey we're calling a health odyssey. This week, my co-host Mike and I invited Jason Kristoff onto the show. Jason is best known as a health, fitness, and wellness coach who specializes in helping clients overcome self-sabotage. He is very outspoken and articulate on the subjects of behavior modification, the subconscious, psychological manipulation, and even mind control and brainwashing. In our conversation with Jason, we explore what he considers the path to optimal health, the essential role that pain plays in our lives, and the ways in which we are currently being mind controlled. He also talks about why you might want to reconsider the role coffee plays in your life. Jason left Mike and I with a lot to think about and at least one or two very important decisions to make as we move forward, which we discussed at the end of the episode in the after party. So be sure to stick around for that. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome back to Terrain Theory. All right, we are live. Jason Kristoff, welcome to the Terrain Theory podcast.
Thanks. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate you inviting me on today.
Excited to have you on and to dive into a number of topics that I think will be of interest to our listener. Let's just kick it off real quick with a little backstory. Tell us who you are.
Well, I was originally an exercise and health coach. I owned a chain of fitness clubs myself before the Canadian government closed me down. And I found that my clients, who I used to personally train, were terrified to become better. They wanted to lose weight. They would pay lots of money to lose weight. But then when they lost a little bit, they would get nervous for some reason and scurry back to their addictions, their wine, their unhealthy habits. And it became so common, I had to phone the Czech Institute. Paul Czech, he's a high-end exercise and nutrition guru in the world. That's where I got my certification. You can't really talk to Paul anytime. So I just talked to the administrators and said, hey, you know, these people, they're very afraid to be their best. Do you have any hints? And they said, well, you didn't go far enough and take the higher degrees. You would have found out that there's mind viruses in a lot of these people. There's a part of the brain called the subconscious that is really there to protect us, and it will judge our environment and what we need to do, say, and think to fit in. And your clients are feeling the pressure of that automatic part of the brain that works outside our conscious awareness. If someone is healthy in an unhealthy tribe, your body will develop these massive nervous system signals to scurry and find sort of conformity with the herd. If you're living in a poverty herd, being rich is dangerous. If you're living in an unhealthy herd, being healthy is dangerous. If you live in a TV herd, reading is dangerous. And I said, oh, that kind of makes some sense. That's what I see in my clients. So they gave me some books to read, and then I started to access the part of the mind that they were highlighting. It's the only time my clients ever got in shape. They ever could come to the gym without me. They didn't need me whipping them like a taskmaster. And I put myself out of a job. So I started doing this coaching online, and eventually I ended up opening sort of an international psychological reprogramming institute where I teach doctors, chiropractors, health coaches, and members of the general public how to reprogram people for success inside a mediocre society.
Got it. So, okay. We both, Mike and I, listened to your episode, your appearance on the Kid Carson podcast. And it was interesting. You sort of ended that podcast episode by saying, well, you got to start by achieving optimal health, be as healthy as you can. And that was like the end. So my question, we're going to pick up where you left off there. How does one achieve optimal health?
Well, optimal health, you'll hear a lot of people described as many different ways. But what I found is that there's only one author, and I don't get any payment from this author. He doesn't even really know I exist. I don't even think he really approves of everything I say. So there's no economic connection or betterment for me to push his products. It's Paul Check, the owner of the Check Institute. He has a book called How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. And he will tell you the truth about health. You will put that truth experiment in your body, and your body will let you know it is the truth because you're going to get the positive results. So the truth isn't really the truth. It's how your body reacts. And I found about 90% of people, maybe 93% of people react optimally when they use Paul Check's information about optimal health. And then from there, a lot of people don't understand, but this tendency all humans have to mimic and copy and emulate and mirror the herd, it gets lessened if you're healthy. So if someone's unhealthy, even as an adult, like we're supposed to be mature and strong adults, even if we're healthy, we're prone to mimic the herd. We feel the pressure of the group. We go along to get along. But if you're unhealthy, it's been proven this mimicking defense mechanism is so many percentiles higher. And that's dangerous in our society today because the way the herd is being manipulated, it's unhealthy, it's not abundant, it's depressed, it's overweight. So it takes a lot of energy to feel the pressure to bond with the bigger herd and back away. But if you're unhealthy, backing away sometimes isn't an option. You're so weak on the inside, so vulnerable on the inside, you don't feel like you have the power to go toe-to-toe with the herd, so you'd rather just toe the company line and do whatever they're doing. So health is very, very important in the realm of becoming an empowered adult, walking your own path, and having that internal security and internal strength to live your own life by your own terms, even if you live in a herd or a flock or a wolf pack that is going in the other direction.
Got it. Without giving too much away, can you talk just high level what it is that the Check Institute implements?
Oh, they teach you everything about like assessing a client in regards to their skeleton, and then probably the only place in the world would say, well, if he's got a greater upper curvature in his spine, he has these emotional issues. And if his ankles and knees and hips are like this, he probably has these emotional issues. If someone has tumors or dysfunction on the right-hand side of the body, and they teach you the highest end assessments to give you this information, the right-hand side of the body is, you'll have male issues, either with yourself as a male or males in your life, and the left side is the female. It opens up this whole other avenue of healing people and understanding all the issues that impact all of us. No one is free and clear of this. And I find that's why the Check Institute is the number one health holistic conditioning or holistic living institute in the entire world. He's the only guru that has ever gone over sort of how our emotions can impact our body and impact everything about us.
Got it. So you talked about the herd. You talked about, you've mentioned in the past, and this is, I suppose you're something of an expert on this, but the idea of mind control, that so many of us are being mind controlled. I'd love to know, like, in what ways are we being mind controlled? And then how can one identify those ways?
Well, I'll give you an example of real life mind control before I explain it. Let's take a movie that was released in 2001. This is just one example. It's a movie called Gone in 60 Seconds. I don't know if you remember it, with Angelina Jolie and Nicolas Cage. It was a movie about car theft. And when this, it was very repetitive. I mean, the narrative was very simple. Nicolas Cage's brother was going to be murdered by a local thug. And the local thug would say, I'm going to call off the murder. Nicolas Cage was a retired car thief. He says, you're going to kind of come out of retirement and steal 100 cars for me tonight. So the car theft was really repetitive. And this part of the brain called the subconscious, its defense mechanism is to assess the environment and see what the repetitive content is to bond us with the tribe by making us, it forces us to bond with the tribe and adopt the behaviors of the tribe. And it does this automatically. And this is very obvious in this example. This movie, when it came out in Burnaby, BC, Canada, and I'd like to mention too, the subconscious does not know the difference between real time, screen time, and imagined thoughts. So if you are a movie goer sitting in the movie theater watching Gone in 60 Seconds, this loving protective part of your mind is literally alerting itself that you've changed tribes. You now sit inside the tribal circle of a car theft tribe. And the easiest way to bond with a car theft tribe is to mimic, mirror, copy, and emulate their behavior. When this movie came out in Burnaby, BC, Canada, car theft went up 70% in the first 4 days, and it had the similar effect every city where it opened. And only a couple intellectuals, a couple scholars are willing to talk about this effect. One of them was Dr. Jerry Kroth, K-R-O-T-H, out of Santa Clara University in California. And he's trying to warn people that the repetitive content of all our media is being tabulated by the subconscious mind in an attempt, a loving, protective attempt to morph our behavior and adapt our behavior to mimic and find safety with the bigger group. And the people who are ruling us, their entire job and their entire claim at power is controlling the repetitive content and therefore controlling our behavior, our thoughts, and our belief systems. And if you haven't noticed, there's a lot of odd and illogical and irrational behaviors erupting out of the public today. And it's based on their screens giving them repetitive content that literally disempowers them, because the group we're dealing with maintains their power by siphoning off ours, by destroying our power. And this is a very old ruling man's trick is to control the repetitive content of the environment and just make sure the public chase their tails and never get ahead in life.
Jason, earlier you used the term mind virus, and it seems like the only virus that can be proven to exist is the mind virus. That's what your work teases out, essentially.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the only science that's really settled, Mike, is the science of psychological manipulation. That's really the only science that's truly settled. Everything that we have going in our society right now that's problematic is a direct link. It's directly linked to the psychological manipulation of the public through repetitive content. And you can use the same mind control programming to upregulate positive content, abundant right. content, it's empowering content, but they don't. That's why every news story on every landing page, on every front page of the newspaper is the same sort of emotional repetitive impact as the Netflix shows and all the movies. It's all very disempowering. It's dark, it's rotting, it's hopeless. And the people who are organizing this, they often say, what we put on the screen at noon will be on the street by nightfall. And they know whatever direction they want us to run in, they're going to put it on the screen first on a repetitive basis. And they don't care if you watch a Denzel Washington, Denzel movie, maybe a Brad Pitt, maybe Morgan Freeman, maybe you see Chris Hemsworth. They riddle the same messages, the same images, and the same pattern, and they interweave them into all the film. So when you're standing in the lobby of the Cineplex, it's a fake freedom. They don't care where you go. You're choosing your own brainwashing modality, your own star, your own script that's going to brainwash you in the exact same way as the cinema to the left and the right of you when you're sitting down. It's fake freedom. It's called the Free Dumb Program, FREE-DUMB, where everything that makes you dumb is provided to you free by the state.
Right. Would you say that social engineering is a synonymous term for mind control?
Yeah, absolutely. They're sort of kissing cousins of each other, brainwashing, social engineering, psychological manipulation. They all sort of work together, and they're somewhat interchangeable with these fine nuances between them.
Right.
So if you were to look at what we are consuming or what's being pushed on us via Hollywood movies, television, news media, what would you say are those like big themes that are being pushed, you know, shoved down our throat?
Well, some of the big themes is that poison can make you healthy, or poison can make your life better, or, you know, poison will make everything up level. Some of the other ones are men are bad, masculinity is toxic, females rule the day. There's many over, like, you need someone to be telling you what to do. That's a pretty big one. Like, when you're born, you need an authority figure lording over you, stealing your money and telling you exactly how to live your life. You need a job. You need to go to school. I mean, there's so many. Those are what we call the nefarious programs, because they're everywhere. And because they're everywhere and they're so repetitive into the million rep range, which the subconscious can't even handle, thinking that these things aren't normal. Just the fact of, say, every kid's show is about going to school, and there's none about them getting a job and dropping out of school, which is usually what's done by the people who rule us, because there's nothing really there. And then to get a job, after you graduate, a job you don't really like, you come home after, you drink the wine. Wine is repetitively imprinted into you as something that's healthy in moderation, although there's no scientific research on the entire planet that red wine is healthy for you in moderation. It's actually zero. There's a compound in the skin of the grape that might be okay for you if it was organic, but there, you know, to mix it with alcohol, these things are all very, very repetitively imprinted into the public. Wine drinking, watching TV, working a job, and it offers no sort of life satisfaction if you follow that trail of breadcrumbs that they put out for you. There are some people that will be satisfied with it, but you can see when people go into such a pathway, their addictions usually go up: coffee addiction, alcohol addiction, screen addiction, junk food addiction. They all sort of come together as one big Santa bag of co-related programs that are imprinted into us. No one is going to be really satisfied getting told what to do by another human being. But if there's enough repetitive content in the shows that we watch, we normalize it, because the subconscious part of the mind is always looking out for us and saying, you know, this is what the most people are doing. Maybe just follow along and you'll be accepted.
How does one then step outside oneself and evaluate and determine the ways in which I might be controlled by these outside forces?
Absolutely. If you're controlled, you're going to be in pain. And so your first indication would be the number of pain-killing modalities that you're involved with to start. So caffeine is a painkiller. Alcohol is a painkiller. Watching a screen and scrolling is a painkiller. Sugar is a painkiller. Flour is a painkiller. Marijuana is a painkiller. So the more you're programmed, the more pain you will have in your life. So first thing you would look for is, how much pain am I avoiding through the use of painkillers. It could even be Tylenol, Motrin, Advil, because as Paul Check teaches, if you're living out lies, you're going to get pain syndromes, usually in your lower back, your lower extremities as well. That's where, you know, if you're living out the Santa bag of lies, you're going to get pain syndromes all over your body. And then what you're going to do is you'll have to work on reducing those pain-killing addictions to get to the real crux, the real root idea of how much you're being controlled. Because how much pain are you really avoiding? You're not going to know until you remove the Band-Aid.
And you're not only talking about physical pain. You're talking about mental, spiritual, emotional, the whole gamut.
Everything. Because a lot of, in the way pain, this group also normalizes pain-killing lifestyles because they don't want anybody coming into contact with pain. Because when a human comes into contact with pain, they mature and individuate, and you cannot rule mature and individuated citizens. So if someone is in pain in our society, they use the repetitive content of their media to convince them that there's a problem, that they're defective, that they have to solve it ASAP, and that they got to take the magic pills from the people in the white butcher coats to relieve their pain. And that's another cycle, is the average person who's living one of these lifestyles that can never make them happy, the repetitive content of the media will tell them that when you're unhappy, living an unhappy lifestyle, that there's a problem with you. And that is very dangerous because so if you're working a meaningless job, you're on coffee. Coffee is correlated to depression to the nth degree. And if anybody wants to investigate that, they can read Stephen Chernysky's book called Caffeine Blues. So if they're alcohol makes people depressed, meaningless, soulless jobs make them depressed. Caffeine makes them depressed. They're not getting enough sunlight. They're working too hard, not enough recuperation. They don't exercise. All this adds up to depression. Any human who engages in this lifestyle will be depressed because the body's trying to say, with the depression signals, you're off the path. And then they're going to convince that person, hey, you know, there's something wrong with you. There's a defect in you. We're really sorry to say, but you're broken. Go get fixed over there. Take some kind of tranquilizing, numbing, sedating chemical. Get back on the treadmill of unhappiness and run that marathon like I know you're capable of. And this just leads to more pain. So this is how someone would start to judge how much mind control they're under, how much pain killing substances they're or activities they're involved with. Once those Band-Aids are gone, feel how much pain you're really supposed to be feeling. And then you can sort out, should I stay at my job? Should I stay at the relationship? Should I change my diet? It's a lot easier to change your health status and your health rituals than to go out and change your relationships and your job. But it's got to start somewhere. Start inside your own body and work your way out.
Got it. So yeah, so step one is the evaluation. How am I killing pain? Right? What is it's an avoidance. What are my addictions that prevent me from feeling this pain? And then once those things are gone, you feel the pain, you experience the pain, and you can start to get to the root cause of that.
Yeah, and in all ancient societies, pain was needed to morph a child into adulthood. So in a pain-killing society, you will have a manifestation of a lot of adults who never made the rite of passage. So they're of adult age, but they act, talk, and think like children. And then this behavior will also be doubly encouraged through the repetitive content and media, Will Ferrell movies, Seinfeld sitcoms, Adam Sandler movies, where there's a glorification, a celebration, a laughter, a comic coding of adults that never grow up. And in tribal rituals or in psychology, laughter is very safe. And our whole nervous system is hardwired to find safety. Nothing ever goes bad in the tribal circle if everybody's laughing. So there's a big magnetic draw to the King of Queens character, a big magnetic draw to the Seinfeld character, Homer Simpson, Peter Griffin from The Family Guy. the nervous system is being conditioned, behavior modified to act like that, to get the laughs, to get the acceptance. And our screens are there to behavior modify us in the wrong direction at the moment.
Your message really is beautifully relevant to our show, the Terrain Theory podcast, you know, as we explore the terrain model, because what you're talking about is the suppression of symptoms. And is what we've learned is that the symptoms are the healing process in action. The symptoms are what's trying to solve a problem that you may not even be aware is there. And so you're looking at the terrain model essentially through the psychological lens.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, working with the body. The body never does anything against you. It's only doing things for you and in your favor. You have to, it has a language of symptoms. So that's its interface. That's its landline, language line to you. And people are taught to ignore that language. We're not taught to be bilingual in that way, where we speak one language to the humans and another language for our body. Like, depression is not sort of it's a warning system that your life's in jeopardy somewhere. I mean, I wish the body could spit out some kind of code through our tongue and we could have a ticker tape fall out our mouth and tell us exactly where we're off the path. But it's also a learning experience. The body's like, okay, you're off the path somewhere. It's up to you to learn and become a master of your domain. You find out where you're off the path. Are you off the path in your relationship? Maybe with your diet, maybe your sleep habits. It's a big mystery. The body declares you as Sherlock Holmes, knowing that the search of one ailment, symptom will give you so much more knowledge on addressing other symptoms in the future. It's just sort of like a ninja training spectrum. And the body's just trying to help you get where you want to go, or help you get to where you have to go, which is a very smart, empowered adult that can do adult things and think adult thoughts, because it's the only way for the species to survive. We can't survive if we're of adult age and act, talk, and think like children. We can't.
So once you feel that pain and you want to start exploring the root cause of that pain, you mentioned that, yeah, unfortunately the body doesn't just spit out the direction, but what are some strategies that the listener can take once you've stripped away those painkillers and you're feeling that raw pain or the depression or whatever those symptoms are, that alert you that you are off the path? Like, what are then some strategies to determine how to get back on that path?
Well, the pain system is automatic. It'll take you where you need to go. You just got to be brave enough to sit in the pain without escaping for the time that the pain teacher needs to give you the speech. A lot of people, they're pain adverse because of all the repetitive content. They think pain is a goblin when really it's a guardian. So there's nothing really to elaborate on in regards to when the pain teacher knocks on the door. You have to be brave enough to open the door. A society will tell you to slam the door. Oh, there's pain. You know, this is also why, don't forget, there's no thumbs down on Facebook anymore. And when I started, there was thumbs down on YouTube. No one placed last in a race anymore, right? In high school, everybody gets a participation ribbon. And no one fails in school anymore. It's all about, we've taught all the people, hey, look, you know, you feel any pain, you need a safe space. You need some bubble wrap. You need a drug. I'm going to pass you anyway. Well, you're robbing the child of having his meeting with the pain teacher. I finished last in the many things. I went on my first interview out of, say, the 250 I've done now was with Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son. Like, what a high-end stress situation to get the first interview. It was painful. Anybody can look it up right now. It's the worst interview I've ever given. Now, if I didn't do it, I would have robbed myself of opening the door to the pain teacher and saying, hey, thanks for coming. I'm going to pour some non-caffeinated tea. We're going to sit down for as long as you need to give me the lessons. So don't worry about sort of the steps to follow once the pain teacher is in the living room. Stay in the seat, feel the pain, open the blast furnace door, and let the flames consume you without running for a coffee, a scroll, a porn session. Just sit and let it completely burn you to the ground. And then the pain teacher will say, good, you're ashes now. And then it'll start to put you back together in the way that will prevent more pain in the future. Because if you don't listen to the pain teacher, he only knocks harder and harder and harder. Your life gets worse and worse and worse. The braver you are, the easier your life gets. So face what's happening in your life without any painkillers, and the whole cycle will take care of itself.
I love that. Jason, what is one thing that many people are addicted to without knowing it? Like, what's a common hidden addiction? I think people or a painkiller. I think people would recognize immediately alcohol, drugs like marijuana, even like screen addiction. But what are some that are lurking in the background that
might well, not the number of? One, and there's a reason for this. So it's not number one by mistake. So the addiction that I'm going to talk about is another one of these gone in 60 second issues that are implanted through repetitive content. The addiction I will name is the number one most repetitive image in all Hollywood film, hands down. Anybody can pick it out in any film. I don't care if you spin the Wheel of Fortune tonight on any film, watch it for the first 15 minutes. You're going to see one of four imprints very quickly. It's a coffee cup, a coffee mug, a coffee machine on the background, or a coffee shop. And there's reasons for this. And if you want to know what caffeine does to your mind and why this is the most favored imprint in all Hollywood film, read Caffeine Blues by Stephen Chernisky, or find my article on the internet. It's got millions of views. 14 something about coffee, 14 problems about coffee, or 14 secrets about coffee. Just put 14 coffee in my name, Jason Kristoff. You'll get up that article. Caffeine, you can't even really say it's an addiction. Let's say it's a program behavior that's imprinted into us through the repetitive content that hijacks and hotwires our subconscious mind pathway. Caffeine has been shown to completely inhibit the prefrontal cortex, which is the adult part of the brain, the long-term thinking part of the brain, the high IQ, the independent, and it activates the limbic system, the fight or flight, which is the child part, the lowest IQ, the no instant gratification, go along to get along part of the mind. So if I'm in the ruling group, and this group is, they just don't happen to walk into the ruling group occupation position one generation to the next. It's long manual. There's a very old manual to ruling the humans. And they heavily invested in research about shutting down the prefrontal cortex, which is just behind the forehead, and activating what's called the limbic system, which is at the base of the brain. If you can activate the limbic system of the population, you activate a slave part of the mind, a part of the mind that cannot judge long-term consequences. They want instant relief from pain. They want to follow the leader, go with the herd. I want out of the emergency immediately, immediately, immediately. And they can't think things through. Coffee and caffeine do all that. And they used to use alcohol. Alcohol was their favorite until they could get enough coffee supply coming up into North America. They know that alcohol does exactly what I just described to the neurological system, but it's really not efficient on the work site, on the construction site for production. So they know caffeine will give us the brain effect we want, and we get double or even triple the work production out of the slave camp. So you get all the benefit plus some extra profit benefit. You get the neurological changes that is desired in the slave class by the ruling class. And coffee is not on every corner because it's addictive. Coffee's on every corner because the addiction is based on the way the brain operates when it wants to feel like it's part of the group. Everybody's drinking. Human behavior is pretty simple. Most people do what they're doing because the other person next to them is doing it. So if you can just brainwash one generation, you don't have to invest too much after that to get everybody else. They don't need to copy the screen. They'll just copy their mom, copy their dad, copy their sister, copy their teacher. And even in the movie Fight Club with Edward Norton and Brad Pitt, they brag about it, that there was a Starbucks takeout coffee cup in every single scene of Fight Club. And that's when Starbucks really took off. And no one would believe that the repetitive image could lead to repetitive behavior. But the people who rule us know that. And don't forget, in 1986, Howard Schultz bought Starbucks as it was going bankrupt. It had 6 franchise stores at that time. But guess who the funders were?
Well, I know because I listened to the episode, Bill Gates.
His dad, and his dad was the primary funder. But in an interview with Howard Schultz, he admitted that, yeah, his dad was the raised the capital, and Bill Gates was there too in the capital of fundraising and heavily involved in how to administrate the franchise that got up. And it's a 34,000 stores now from 6 stores. When they bought it, and Starbucks is integral in the Toronto Dominion Bank in Canada, where I bank. If I use my Interact card, I get free Starbucks. I also get free alcohol at the LCBO, the Liquor Control Board of Ontario. So all these things are intertwined, and the average person just can't. This is a big, big picture to comprehend, but you could never comprehend it when you're caffeinated or sugar infused or marijuana infused, because the part of the brain that can see this and process the vastness of the con job can only be executed by the prefrontal cortex. So again, this is another reason they don't want the high IQ brain function going on, because if people had their high IQ brain function, they can draw this diagram in their head and see that all this is connected. It's all connected.
The timing of this conversation is, I would say, maybe not coincidental. Mike and I don't believe in coincidences. Our last episode, we talked about yerba mate, which is a tea from South America, as a potential alternative to folks out there to coffee, because it doesn't give you the jitters, but it has the same amount of caffeine as coffee. Both Mike and I have been discussing in back channels, like, do we give up caffeine? How do we do it? How do we go about it? It is stunning when you step back, look at one's own addiction to caffeine, how often you've either said or heard said, like, I can't start my day without a cup of coffee. I think most listeners would hear the list alcohol, marijuana, drugs, and go, yeah, well, those are addictions, and they have a very clear downside. But caffeine's like a central nervous system stimulant. You know, it's a nootropic. Like, this is something that enhances you in every way. I think it's going to be hard for the average listener to even fathom, to imagine a life without coffee or caffeine.
That's the power of mind control. Because they can't imagine their lives without poisoning themselves.
So I have to ask, do you drink coffee? I would imagine no. And how long has it been since you've had coffee or caffeine?
I've only drank coffee, and it was a good experiment too. I didn't drink coffee up until 44 years old.
Wow.
So I would go to Greece. I've been to Santorini, a family on Santorini, and I would go there for many summers for many decades in a row. And I started having the espresso after the meal because all the Greeks around me were having it. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. I feel so groovy. this is a drug. I love it. It's a drug. And I used to be into drugs. I mean, I don't know if you know my story, but before I was a master self-sabotage coach, I was a master saboteur. I was the biggest human mess that you've ever seen. So I gave up the drugs and I'm like, oh, this drug, after I quit all the other drugs, I'm like, this is the best drug ever. But then I started getting the weird effects. You know, I started getting bleeding. I started getting temper control problems, insomnia. I would fly into a rage a lot easier. I'm pretty rageful because I'm Aries based, but I was like, wait, what's going on here? And so I started to read the book, but I understand the addiction. Like I completely understand. I would not want someone to try to do anything that they don't want to do. Right. I believe in that sort of freedom. But understand is that the power of mind control is they're always going to trick you to hurt yourself through the repetitive imaging. So forget about the coffee. Focus on the process and then work your way out from there. The process is they can't show up on your lawn and hold your ankles and your wrist down and say, give you a medical application on the lawn. They can't open your mouth with the goons putting the hands in your mouth and pour the wine down. And if they delivered an 80-inch screen TV free to your house and paid for your Netflix, all this stuff would be like, even someone with a prefrontal cortex inhibitor would be like, hold on a second. I don't think this is what are you guys doing this for? So the process that the average coffee drinker or wine drinker wants to focus on is that they don't have the power to do to you by force what they're tricking you to do to yourself. So they have to use the repetitive hacking and hot wiring of the subconscious mind pathway to make you volunteer for everything that knocks your own dick in the dirt. That's their game. So yeah, you're addicted to coffee, you love it, but they did that because they need you caffeinated for you to play your role on the chessboard in the next 10 years. They need you thinking wine is healthy, they need you working a depressing job, they need you extended financially. That's why for the 10 years before 2020, interest rates were like 1 and 1.5 and 2. And then they need you at break even financially. They need you sedated. They need you caffeinated. They need you tranquilized. They need you to watch all the killing on Netflix so you're sort of numb to killing and death and murder and mayhem. They need all that, but they need you to do it. They need you to participate, to produce the product for them that they're going to weaponize against each other, against your whole culture. So just focus on the process and get offended that you might need the offended energy to pull out of this. Is that caffeine is a poison. The coffee plant or many other plants use it to kill bugs and other competing foliage. It's a poison. The activation of energy you feel is the activation of your body. Like when you're poisoned, your body says, I got to make my heart beat faster. I got to get this into the toilet. I got to get this into the toilet. I got to have explosive diarrhea. I got to get some oxygenation. Like I got to get rid of this poison. So all these things that I'm talking about, it's not to create guilt and shame because no, that's going to disempower you to no end. They're the lowest vibrations ever measured to come out of the human body. So no guilt and shame if you're involved in this. But try to get a little bit of anger energy, a little bit of fire to know that they have tricked you and you're using your own money, your own time and your own body to create the disaster capitalistic society that they need in order to move their agenda forward. And if you stop hurting yourself by your own hand, they certainly don't have the raw power to do to you by force what they're tricking you to do to yourself through the screens. So that's their weakness. If you don't hurt yourself, they won't and they can't. And at that point, you'd be 10 times more empowered where these people actually have to go to jail. And anybody that was associated with them have to be put on trial and basically charged with crimes against humanity. Any teacher teaching children sexual confusion agenda, they have to be put on trial. Any nurse that participated in this operation, they have to be put on trial. It's sad, but we have to get there. So we either get to that side of the spectrum, or we're actually going to circle the drain and, you know, we'll go into the annals of history like the dodo bird.
You mentioned there's a word, a phrase that you've mentioned, and Mike and I have used it sparingly. It's triggering for folks for obvious reasons, but slavery and this notion that we are in some way slaves.
Yes.
Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, ancient slavery was about, I would own you. And then, so this is, there's expenses though with ownership. Like Ben, if I took you and you were my slave, I have to house you. I have to feed you. If your wife's pregnant, I got to care for that. That's one slave down too, if she gives birth. I have to maintain the house, cut the grass, feed the water. I have to, there's a whole bunch of expenses. So my profit really with you as a slave is still in the 60 to 50% range. So what has happened, the modern slavery, is all those expenses has been offloaded to you. And then I'm going to tell you you're free. And if you want to know how this particular operation has come about, you can go to, there's a website called the Jones Plantation. It is a feature film by Larkin Rose, which will explain in cinematic brilliance how this sort of involuntary slavery became voluntary slavery, where the people who used to be our slave owners gave us the fake freedom to pay for our own expenses, plus they tax us so we have no money left whatsoever. We can only pay for the expenses to maintain our occupation of the plantation. And so a lot of people have a hard time comprehending that, but if they were to watch the Jones Plantation, and there's sort of a free version, an older version on Odyssey or BitChute that you could find, just put human farming, the Jones Plantation, and the feature film was just released, but this is actually what's going on, is that we now pay the house, we pay for the car, we pay the gas, we pay our suits to go, and then if we have any money left over, they take it from us, and all we can pay for is the car and the house. It's the exact same thing, and the profit is going in the same manner to slave owner, which is these political parties. Basically, it's ancient ruling families masquerading as our government. Those are the old slave owners. And that's why they're trying to lock us down, because this scam is getting old. And if they don't lock us down and more people catch on, the plantation will be closed.
Is that what you're sensing? Are you sensing that more people are catching on?
Oh, everybody's catching on at this point. It's going to be a battle royale very soon. And it has to be, because this group is very used. They're inherently lazy. This group, I mean, that's why they like AI instead of armies. They're this inherently lazy. They don't know how to work. Someone like, say, Justin Trudeau, he couldn't operate a Max Milk, a corner store, a 7-Eleven efficiently. He has to steal the money from other people to have his lifestyle. He couldn't hold a job down anywhere. None of these people could. This is all they know, is stealing money and paying goons to be around them to protect them. That's all they know. And people are getting sick and tired of it. So it's sort of their programming against our awakening, because they have really no intention of starting a business and try to operate in the free market. That's not their intention. Their intention is to steal the money and shut down the free market, where they'll always get the profit and have no competition.
Yeah, power and money. It's like the oldest motivators, isn't it?
Safety, right? They have the same safety program as we all do, but they're also lacking what's called Christ consciousness, which is the everybody can have business ideas, but you have to counterbalance them to the detriment of the entire society. These people do not have the Christ consciousness to counterbalance anything they're doing. And I think their bloodline or their gene line, their royal lineage is fine-tuned at this point. The genes can get very sharp after only three generations. These are hundreds of generations old ruling families that have put the Christ consciousness aside, and that's why they're always described as the Antichrist or evil or the devil. They just lack the empathy to understand that everybody has to survive and there has to be a basic standard of living beyond eating crickets and having a universal basic income. Basically, if someone works hard in a free market economy, they should be able to benefit personally from the fruits of their own labor. This group doesn't like that and doesn't agree with that because it threatens their power base.
And when you say Christ conscience, are you talking like the inherent morality that we're sort of born into this world with? We don't need government and laws to tell us what is right and what is wrong.
Well, the Christ consciousness, Christ wasn't Jesus's last name. Christ is actually a title that means healer. So basically, Christ consciousness is as you go into the world, it's sort of like treat other people as you like to be treated, do no harm or minimize the harm. Like if I go out in the world and I have to eat, maybe I'll get a chicken and I'll try and do my best to balance the Christ consciousness against that. But this group looks at us as a feeding lot. That's what they look at is they look at humans as farm animals and they don't care about our well-being whatsoever. And people are starting to understand that. And it's hard. We're going to have to claw our way back out of this because a lot of people have been so conditioned that it's normal to have someone lording over them, stealing all their wealth and then organizing psychological operations toward them that ends in their premature death. Some people have adopted that as completely normal. So we have a lot of work to do, but I'm very hopeful that people can break their mind control, break their black magic spells that occupy them, and start reintegrating the Christ consciousness into how they operate in the world.
Let's go. We're circling back naturally then. How would the listener go about hacking like behavior modification or mind control techniques for the better and use it on themselves to break out of bad habits, old bad habits, and start good new ones?
Yeah, it's very easy. Basically, repetitive content is 85% of mind control and 15% is toxicity. Repetitive content will be adapted by humans even in their natural state 5,000 years ago. But if the people are toxic, there's a greater propensity to mimic and copy and emulate. So there's only one form of, mind control, repetition and poison. So if you want to brainwash yourself, if you want to mind control yourself and behavior modify yourself, you have only one choice. You have to control the repetitive content of your environment in the directions of your dreams at the time, and you got to reduce your toxicity, so that your prefrontal cortex is open for the very large IQ ideas, because that's going to help you become financially abundant in your relationships. So not everybody has the same goals, though. Some people may want marriage stability. Someone may want $1 million. Someone may want to lose 30 pounds. Whatever your goal is, focus on repetitive content of that goal until it's achieved.
And so
if you wanted abundance and wealth, Tony Robbins and Grant Cardone only, all day, every day, nothing negative about money. And the movies are riddled with anti-money, money is evil programming. Shut down the negative content. Upregulate the positive content in the direction of your dreams. Reduce your poisoning so that you can have full access to your prefrontal cortex. And it's as easy as that. I mean, that's all mind control. That's how they mind control us. And it's the same way we can mind control ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. So you mentioned the painkillers already, a list of some of those painkillers, which I would classify as poisons, many of them poisons or toxins. What are some other toxins that we should be avoiding that you haven't mentioned?
Well, what I could do is I'll send you a whole list of common toxins that are in the house. They're basically, the big ones are very obvious. And then there's a whole class of smaller ones. And I mean, even like chlorine in your shower water, people don't know how dangerous the chlorine is. There's chlorine filters for the shower. There's chlorine filters for the tap. Underarm deodorant, move from Teflon pans to stainless steel. Don't use the microwave. Don't, like, I don't dye my hair and I don't dye my beard. I'm 53 years old, but I do use John Masters organic pomade. So there are healthy options. I use an organic soap from groundsoap.com. Everything I try to interact with has to be chemical free. Now, I'm not getting all the chemicals. I'm not silly, but I'm doing my part and I'm fighting the battle the best I can with the weapons I have right now. So I'm pretty invested in clean everything. I have glass bottle water beside me. I mean, I don't like this ring light because it's made of LEDs and that's sort of polluting in a way. But nothing, it's about progress, right? It's not about perfection. You just do what you can, use what you have, start where you are, and move ahead, knowing that your TV and movie, they're weapons. They're not there to entertain you. They're there to entrain you. The poisons are there to upregulate the training. And if you know their 1-2 punch, you can back out of it. It's that simple. It's not complex. And if anybody wants to learn more about any of these things, they should just get on my email list, free information, slow drip. They can email me at jason@freedomfromselfsabotage.com. I'll just slow drip your information for free so that you can understand this a little bit at a time and change at your own pace.
Jason, in this podcast, we talk a lot about raising awareness. You've mentioned it too. We try not to use the phrase waking people up or being awake. We like awareness, but raising the awareness around the lie of germ theory and the validity of the terrain model, the existence of these toxins, listing what they are, the dangers of mandates and vaccines. But in real life, it can be really hard to have these conversations, like in one-on-one, with family and friends that we've known forever. And we hear this sentiment echoed by many of our listeners too, the challenge of breaking through to people who are close to us on some of these really important topics. So how do you determine within like the first 5 minutes of a conversation whether a person is receptive to new information or can change their mind, or whether you're just banging your head against a wall and it's better to turn your attention and energy elsewhere?
Well, I only teach people who are interested. So in a conversation, I don't introduce myself as someone who's a teacher. I just introduce myself as Jason. If they don't know anything about me, I'm not going to push anything on them. They could believe in the medical paradigm. They could be wearing a mask. If they're that sort of not in alignment with myself, I'll just try to make the conversation brief. No disrespect to them. But the way humans work, I mean, I want to be around people who are aware, but I'm not going to push my awareness on anybody that's not ready. And don't forget, everybody has the tribal inclination. So if you say something that backs up your tribe, don't be shocked when they say something back that backs up their tribe. They're just trying to gain loyalty. They're trying to like beat their chest and say, you know, I'm with this tribe. I'm with the vax tribe. I'm with the mask tribe, right? And they're only trying to piss around their territory because that's the tribe that gives them protection. That's the tribe that makes them feel safe. The fact that, I mean, we all know poisoning yourself, whether through the mouth or pushing it under your skin, it's an illusion. That's not going to make people feel safe whatsoever. But some people would rather participate in the poisoning just to have access to the bigger herd, even though they might die. But usually adults won't make that bet. Children will make the bet because they're so afraid of being alone. But an adult, a real adult, and that's why in ancient societies there were rites of passage, so that children always turned into adults. But in our society, a lot of people are so scared as children on the inside that they will do the cult rituals and inject the poison just to secure the group's security. And they know they're rolling the dice on their whole life, but it's a reflection of how weak and childlike and infantilized they've been. But no one's born like that. It's also imprinted into them. We're all supposed to mature into fully functional, empowered adults. But the way our society blocks pain, they know what they're doing, and they're manufacturing this group that will roll the dice on their lives just to find security in the bigger group. As an empowered adult, I'm not going to roll the dice. I'm okay being by myself. All adults are, but a lot of adults, they're so infantilized, they will roll the dice at the casino of life, just trying to make friends with the bigger herd so that they can feel safer. If you bring child-based coping strategies into an adult life, you will always get the snake eyes.
Jason, I believe you're a parent as well. How do you instill these ideas and these values with your own kid?
Through osmosis. through repetitive content. Because my daughter, I remember I would cook for her in the morning. Breakfast was pan-fried broccoli and cauliflower in butter. Give her some free-range chicken breast. Give her some fresh squeezed juice, maybe some celery and orange juice, and she'd go off to school for years and years. And then when she started sleeping out, they'd say, "What would you like for breakfast?" And they'd say, "Well, do you have any cauliflower and broccoli?" And so I it's brainwashing, but yeah. I'm not going to give her Fruityos or chemical shreddies or pasteurized, pus-filled, sickened cow's milk. I'm not going to do any of that. And that's the thing about knowledge, right? Is that they also repetitively drown you in ignorance and steal sort of that knowledge from you that you could use to empower yourself. So it's a long road, but I tell people, look, it's better to start now than to try and start when you're in a 15-minute camp, because at that point, no one's coming at that point. You couldn't even save yourself if you're locked behind those walls.
Yeah, it turns into a much more literal and physical prison, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you're not, you have to live in reality. You have to maintain your health, and that life is painful. Like, we live on a painful planet. I'm sorry, I can't change that. If you run from it, you're only going to get more pain. Very simple.
At the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned that you had some health and fitness clubs that were shut down by the Canadian government. What year was that?
2020.
So that was 2020. Because you've been...
Was it 20? No, hold on. 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've been, like you said, you've done hundreds of interviews. You've become sort of a leader in this space of psychological wellness, for lack of a better term, freedom from self-sabotage. But was it really 2020 that sort of poured fuel on your fire and encouraged you to be more outspoken and more articulate and just more passionate about what you do?
Oh, I've been getting banned and blacklisted for 20 years.
Okay, so it's been a longer journey, yeah.
25-year overnight success is what people say.
That's how it always works, right?
I used to write in a newspaper in Canada for 15 years, and I was this is how old it goes back. I lambasted vaccines. I lambasted milk, microwaves, pasteurized orange juice, medication. They would let me run rugshot over all of it. And then all of a sudden it just kept going down and down. It was the most popular article in the entire newspaper. And I've been writing, I've written over 3,500 articles about these topics over the past 20 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been speaking up a lot. This is the only time period in the past 3.5 years. I got arrested with Randy Hillier, the Canadian frontline nurses, and Pastor Hildebrand in Canada for speaking up against COVID lockdown policies. It was against the Reopening Ontario Act, which would be the closing of Ontario Act. But we all know how they invert the word magic there. But yeah, I'm getting attention now. But I've been always trying to tell people, hey, look, we're going the wrong way. Everybody's sick. No one's healthy. What's going on? So I've been banging that drum for a long time.
Yeah, and we're thankful that you have. We're thankful for folks like you who are not afraid to go against the herd. Jason, as we come to the end of the podcast, we've got a question for you that we ask all our guests. What are your non-negotiables, the daily habits you do to tend to your terrain?
Basically, sleep is a huge one. Making sure to navigate the looking at the screen with the blue blocking glasses, eating the organic food and exercise and sunbathing here in Mexico, even if it is 100 degrees and 100% humidity. Mm-hmm. I still get out there and do that. Those are my non-negotiables. It has to be good sleep, organic food, clean water, and I could, if need be, I could survive on probably $45,000 a year and just be completely happy as long as those non-negotiables were in place.
Well said. And where's the best place for the listener to learn more about you?
They could go to my Shadowban Facebook page at Jason Christoff. They could visit my Shadowban Instagram page at Jason Christoff. And they could go to jchristoff.com. to find out about some of my reprogramming systems that I have. I have a new program coming up called The Power in You on September 30th. It's brand new. It's everything I know wrapped into sort of once a week for 10 weeks of one-on sort of personal Zoom meetings with me. And it's an anti-self-sabotage, anti-mind control program. And it's inexpensive. It's rapid. It's effective. It's efficient. I would say it's the best program I've ever rolled out. So if anybody wants to know anything about that, just email me at jason@freedomfromselfsabotage.com. And I can pull anybody out of any nosedive at any time or your money back. I know I sound like I'm selling the ShamWow right now, but that's exactly what it's like. I'm confident.
I love it. The ShamWow of optimal human existence.
ShamWow of overcoming self-sabotage.
It's incredible. I love it. Jason Christoff, thanks so much for joining us on the Terrain Theory Podcast.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, everybody, welcome to the after party in the Pineal Room, Dr. Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you first come across Jason?
I think it was just online.
Algorithm,
Instagram, something.
Yeah.
I think I can't even remember. I don't know. It's like so much of his message is like to create your own mind control by like, you know, surrounding yourself with the ostensibly the positive habits that you're trying to embody. And so, you often comment how I'm like mainlining content. I feel like the healthier I get, the more thirst I have for guys like Jason or gals like Kelly Brogan or whatever it is, people who just like confidently, calmly, clearly can call bullshit, can explain themselves, and have your best interest at heart. I think that's partly, I've made an addiction out of that, and some could argue.
Well, it's a good addiction, and I'm really glad that first that the algorithm served him up to you, and then you served him up to me, and we got him on because the painkiller, I imagine that a lot of what he said resonated with the listener. maybe not in a good way, like maybe in a triggering way, like those aren't painkillers. You know, you can't call my morning coffee. It's a tough one, man. The caffeine thing. And we were talking this morning as we were preparing for this thing and yesterday, like, okay, are we going to do this? Are we going to give up caffeine? I've done it before. The water fast, obviously, but prior to that, last summer, actually, I had given up caffeine. I'd given up coffee completely, and I'd weaned myself off the mate, and I was just doing that dandelion blend. And it's really interesting, Mike, because again, like looking back at this whole like health challenge that I had with my skin and the skin rash, and I have to wonder if any of that was precipitated by the elimination of caffeine. Like if you look at any symptom as a healing response, perhaps even like a detox, was my body able to like really start to heal because I had removed this poison, this really key poison that had been suppressing everything, allowing me to feel pain.
I didn't realize those coincided.
They did. You know, that it's, again, it's like piecing this puzzle together, Sherlock Holmesing this whole thing and looking at the clues. And so then I begin to wonder what will happen this next time, because I have to do it. Yeah. It seems like just a no brainer for both. I mean, I don't like signing you up for a challenge.
No, this is one I want to be signed up for. It's funny.
Go ahead.
This was top of mind for me when we had Tom Tarshin in here. We're talking about yerba mate. which is funny because I felt like I kept maybe playing devil's advocate a little more than I would have, because I've been a coffee adherent for a very, very long time. The only time I ever quit coffee was when it was like giving me so much stomach distress when I was drinking it sort of all day, like in that phase of my 20s. It's like, I better pump the brakes on this and like let my stomach recover. But I never thought about giving it up. It was only like, let's give my system a rest so I can get back to business. And I do still use it as a crutch. You know, I have my big coffee I've spoken about before in the morning. You know, I buy organic coffee and I load it up with my Shilajit and my mushroom powders and some coconut oil and even some pearl powder. Like, I'll just like load it up. But I think my strategy in the past has been to cold turkey things I'm trying to remove, but I don't know if I want a cold turkey caffeine. I think I'm going to be a little more gentle with myself and start to phase it out. As we were texting this morning, you know, maybe I'm going to change the ratio from coffee to dandy blend slowly over a month until it's the coffee's gone. I know it's doable. And I know that a water fast would be another way of just like sort of in the cold turkey methodology, but I've got the hoot this week. Like, today is not the day to give up coffee. No. I even have like 3 cold brews in the fridge from the health food store, just as like my backup supply, not to necessarily get me through the day, but to make sure when I'm off site, when I'm on site and away from my home, that I have a good organic coffee first thing in the morning. Which, even coming out my mouth, it's an addiction, right? But it is one I've been coddling myself in that space for so long that I want a gentle dismount. The other thing is, I love Jason, but it's interesting when you have these conversations, you do tend to speak in sort of broad strokes. He's like, well, if you're on coffee, you're not going to see essentially the way that you're being victimized. It was like, well, we see it. We're on coffee. You know what I mean? I fucking see it. Am I ready to level up? Am I ready to be more free? Am I ready to be more, someone who courts more abundance in my life? Abso-fucking-lutely. So I do see it as a liability, but it's not necessarily a black and white situation where you're actually like a zombie because you're consuming caffeine, obviously.
Of course. Right. And it's the cumulative effect of not just coffee, but whatever other painkillers or toxins or poisons you're putting in to your body that perhaps decrease your chances of the self-awareness around it. I mean I'm right there with you. Like, I feel that way. It's like my day can't get going. I can't imagine
no
like starting a work day, even on the weekends, like, all right, full, you know, full on with Grayson as a dad, I can't think about doing that until I've had my tea. And I start to think about what I'm modeling to him, because I'll even say, like, you know, Papa's making his tea. Like, you know, I'm going to come, like, we're going to play, but Papa's going to make his tea.
I know.
And I just made you breakfast, so I'm going to have my tea. And like, it doesn't matter to him whether it's coffee or tea. It's like a thing that Papa is saying he has to have. And the modeling is happening. You know, man, I really look forward to, I hear what you're saying. I think I'll do the same thing is start to phase it out. But probably sooner rather than later, because I'm really excited to get back to that headspace with this new understanding of what it was doing to me.
Yep.
and the crutch that it was. So to get to that headspace of not having it in my life and try to like have that better awareness of the comparison.
Yeah. I did buy the book that he recommends, Caffeine Blues.
Caffeine Blues.
Thriftbooks.com, friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Screen time too. I've been really aware of, I will be more aware, but I've been very aware of all the times that I'm reaching for my phone.
Yeah.
Just out of habit and scrolling and trying to be better about like just putting it away and not touching it, not turning it on first thing in the morning, turning it off completely earlier in the evening. So I don't have that around, and very much more aware of how I'm modeling the use of my phone around Grayson.
Yeah.
I really don't want this kid to grow up to be like addicted to screens I mean, I think that's my greatest fear, is like losing him to like the screen. And so modeling it is obviously a really important one, but for myself first, the use of the screen and the scroll as a painkiller rather than sitting with my feelings. Hopefully that's an easier one to continue to cut down on.
It's, well, like I was saying earlier, there's this double-edged sword element, because also within the context of the screen, there's Jason Kristoff and there's the Law for Mankind course. Right. And it's like, you know, right. And there were a lot of parallels with the Law for Mankind course in terms of dealing with your addictions and in service of leveling up and becoming an adult and fostering that bravery and that confidence to be your best, most empowered, courageous self. Very analogous. And I love that symbiosis of all these ideas. But I do find myself using that screen time, even ostensibly in the service of bettering myself, as a distraction from maybe something else I should be doing, be it as a father, be it as a husband, be it as, a worker or whatever it is. It's really interesting the way we can be manipulated even in the service of ostensibly bettering ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, the bit about how Hollywood and the entertainment industry has pushed this like failure to launch, you know, not adult grown up figure on us as like the buffoon that gets a laugh and like sort of normalizes the infantile father.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I wanted to push him on that a little bit, because, you know, we get laughs from that. I think humor has an important role to play in, you know, tribal existence, herd existence, like the human experience. Comedy and humor and laughter for me seems like a really a high vibration, right? Mm-hmm. Choosing what we're laughing at, choosing what we find humorous.
Well, in the context that it exists within, right? And this gets to a Daniel Quinn concept of the mother culture, like mother culture normalizing the way that life is set up. And you can create a lot of hilarious, situation comedies is what they're called, but within this very small sandbox. Yeah. And that's what he's saying. It's like any show, kids that have kids in it, it's they're in school, they're in college, they're on this particular track. It's just this normalized vision, again, Quinn, mother culture of how you do it, of how it goes. just like scribbling within the lines.
I think what he was, when he talked about that figure, that role, that comedic figure, I think that really hit home. One, because you've been talking about it, like, be the adult in the room, you know, grow my beard out, show the gray. Like, we've lived our lives sort of embracing or celebrating the youthful appearance and stuff. Well, it's time to like embrace being an adult and the growing up process and all that that entails.
That rite of passage is missing from our culture.
It is 100% missing from our culture. It does not exist. It simply like does not exist. Or whatever rites of passage are there, just not, are toxic.
The closest you get is like, what, maybe graduation from college, which you just spent 4 years like poisoning yourself in many ways, you know, psychologically and literally.
Yeah.
And that's a right, that now you're an adult after 4 years of keggers.
First alcoholic beverage ordered at a bar when you turn 21.
Sure.
Like that's a rite of passage. And
there it
you
is.
Are just poisoning yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all the wrong ones. I mean, so it's just a lot of food for thought. This is a more, so it's a sober episode, I suppose, Michael. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to, I guess back to my point, like, I don't want to lose like humor.
Right.
I don't know.
Joyless, like, or someone who's known as someone who can't have a good time.
Yeah.
Right?
Sorry, this is in real time, like
yeah.
holding the mirror up.
That's good.
But like making a childish joke, like making an infantile, like immature joke that I know is going to get a laugh. Like, should I got to give that up? Maybe I just have to give that up. Like it's time to move on.
It's like our culture is built upon that's what she said jokes.
That's a perfect example. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, and I've been thinking a lot about that too.
So we can't laugh at that anymore? Like, I don't make those jokes anyway because they're overused, but I laugh at them sometimes.
I mean, they are the best jokes, but it's something I've been thinking about too. It's just like the normalization of our base instincts and like the cheap laughs and everything's like oversexed and over, you know, it's all about pleasure, right? When you get right down to it, all those jokes are about pleasure because all those jokes are about sex and this like we've been raised in sort of like sex is taboo. And when I was young, I was like, you know, I was all about like taboo busting. It's like all I wanted to do was like talk about sex or write about sex because it's like, let's blow up the taboo.
Yeah.
But you're still playing right into their hand because you're just like you're just obsessing over these, you know, when you get into the Christ consciousness and like old world knowledge and like, you know, the sacredness of these acts and not just like the base nature of like having as many orgasms as you can in a week, which I think is basically what most people are trying to do from like age 18 on. It's really interesting to start to counterweigh that with like the price it takes on your intellect and your soul and your empathy and just priorities.
How did Will Blunderfield put it? Eating McDonald's and ejaculating all over the place.
Yeah. But I love the fact, and I remember when we had Etienne on, you're like, you know, I want to be careful that we always tie this back into health and like, we're not just spinning off into some, you know, other rabbit holes. But I do love Jason's messages because there's a lot of crossover there. But if you're controlled, you're going to be in pain. And the idea of suppressing symptoms is exactly how the pharma allopathic model is built. It's about suppressing symptoms, never dealing with the root cause.
Yeah.
Take this, you'll be fine. Just keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. Take this, you'll be fine. And I love that he has applied that to the psychological realms of mind control and addiction, because that is really where you will find freedom and health.
Yeah, easy dots to connect, huh?
Really easy, really easy. Yeah. And he explains it so well. And it's funny because, and I love that even himself and you at the beginning, before we hit record, you're like, well, we're going to ease into this because we don't want to like freak people out. But it's like, it's tough stuff. I actually played the Kid Carson interview. I listened to it with Ruthie on a drive home a couple weeks ago, and it's tough terrain to share with someone who's not necessarily at the same place on the journey as you are.
Yeah, Yeah, without question, without question. Well, listen, man, let's wrap because you've got to go. Yeah, you've got like Will in the room, right? I've got Grayson knocking at the door.
Yep.
You've got the Hoot to set up for. By the time this thing airs, the Hoot will have come and gone. Hopefully some of you listeners will have seen us there and hung out, got a little time. So yeah, let's get to it. And then caffeine, we'll keep everyone posted on that journey to kick caffeine and then all the other painkillers in our life. That's it, folks. Remember, nothing you heard here should be taken as medical advice, as neither Mike nor I are medical experts. Remember that you are light, you are love, pain is a guardian, not a goblin. Go have the meeting with the pain teacher. You are your primary health care provider. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one. We'll be right back.